There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a bad council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. 251-343-0106. And thank you for the correction. You are correct. I remember from hearing C.B. Carl said they not MREs in Vietnam. They were C-rations. Yes. And those guys, they were friends of my dad's, cussed the C-rations from Vietnam. So... MREs, but what we had were MREs when we were in Scouts, and we thought we had figured out something really cool, and then we realized they weren't as good as we thought they were going to be. Actually, you know what? Let's talk to my buddy John Sharp with AL.com. Also spent a long time in Scouting. Did you ever do MREs for your meals when you're doing camping trips?
Yeah.
I did. I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to be. Yeah. I remember here at about to be 54 years old. They were not great.
No, they weren't. But they apparently the market has changed in that, and I've been told that they're really good. I'm not the right person to ask on that because I haven't had one in a long time. But apparently, that's there's pressure to apparently not as bad as they used to be.
Okay. Well, that, I mean, that's some improvement there. So I figure, and we will get to it. I want to talk about. Because I remember when the Toys R Us went away. I remember this right here in Mobile. Got a story about Toys R Us I want to get to. But you were at a meeting. I know you probably have a story coming up on this. But where are we? I guess give the backstory on this question of the Dolly Parton like dinner theater thing. And then what they've been figuring out. What's happening?
So the Orange Beach City Council called a special meeting for today. They voted on, apparently there was a deadline they were running up on to make a decision on what they wanted to do. Whether or not they wanted to pursue a purchase of the beach RV, say it's a mobile, like a RV park that's right across the highway from Orange Beach City Council or Orange Beach City offices. And they were given the option of whether or not they wanted to purchase this. In order to do that, the first step would be get an appraisal of this property. It's about 23 acres. And they decided today not to do that. They're not interested in purchasing it. I think the estimate price tag on the purchase would have been somewhere around, I think it was around $12 million was the figure that was quoted today. Just deemed too expensive to pursue at this point, given that apparently the city of Orange Beach has other projects they're pursuing, one of them being a community swimming pool, another one being a potential civic center project down the line, all of which would be, fairly expensive projects. And they didn't want to dip too far in their reserves to pursue a property purchase. And this property is interesting because this is exactly where the Pirates Voyage Dinner Theater would have gone. And that caused a big uproar early last month.
Mm-hmm.
The public came out to a town hall meeting and they were vehemently opposed to it. A lot of activity, a lot of objections to it on social media. And that project has since been officially pulled from the Planning Commission's agenda, so it is no longer for that particular site.
So that's done.
That's a done deal now.
Okay, so I don't know, it surprised me, because I mean, it's a Dolly Parton dinner theater, it's not a solar farm, and people really were against this.
The argument I heard was it had to do a lot with the location. I think there was some concerns about almost too much at that particular particular place they were looking at. But I also heard some commentary that there's some concerns about adding something that would be viewed as outside of the norm of what we think Orange Beach should be going forward, being that they didn't want this to look like Panama. There's this viewpoint of down here at the beach, we don't want to look like Panama City Beach. We don't want to look like Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. We want, you know, we know we're a popular place for vacations, but that's for our beaches. And so that's
Yeah, but there's a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of other infrastructure. And you could argue, I guess, Gulf Shores versus Orange Beach, but to act like it's just marinas and boats and no other stuff going on. I mean, there's a ton of other stuff going on. For a Dolphin Island guy like me, it's always kind of shell shock when I get to South Baldwin.
Well, when the public, you know, their commentary again, this is back in May during the town hall, what I heard over and over again was, we don't mind it. We don't mind a family friendly theater, because that's exactly what this is. It's mm-hmm. not like it's some burlesque show or something. It's a family friendly theater. It's a show you want to take your kids to. So, but the bottom line is they wanted it away from this side of the canal. They wanted it on the other side, you know, where there's currently a Margaritaville project under development, mm-hmm. or probably even further up north where O is at. Of course, O is in Foley, so that's not an Orange Beach matter at that point. And, the public only has so much to say in Orange Beach about what goes on in Foley. So, but yeah, there was some of those arguments that were made that, yeah, we don't mind this project, is just not at this location. So basically the project was illuminated how unpopular the project was at that particular location. And it's been official as of about a week or two that the project has been pulled from the Planning Commission agenda, and it's no longer.
So the city's deciding whether it's too much money to buy that place or...
Right. The property's up for sale. They've decided it's just too much money. There really is no plan for what they would even do with the property if they bought it. So...
Not a solar farm?
No, not that I'm aware of. But who's to say that may not happen in the future?
You'd be wishing you had Dolly Parton's Pirate Voyage dinner show. Right. But they don't know that yet.
Okay. I'm not saying that, but... We don't know what'll be there right now. What it is a longtime RV park, but it is certainly something that the city of Orange Beach said at this point in time, we're not going forward with that. And that just kind of follows up a lot of other stuff that's going on in Orange Beach right now as well.
Right. That's what I was thinking. I mean, you just had this council meeting, and let's talk about, you had a headline about the chaos in Orange Beach. So, I mean, what is this between the council and the mayor? What's going on?
Yeah, majority of the council button heads right now with the mayor. There's a lot of stuff going on, behind the scenes. Right now they were, for instance, when I left today, they were going into about an hour-long executive session, the council was. Well, Mayor Kennan also left the council chambers and said he was heading off to lunch. So I'm like, oh boy. So there is a federal lawsuit that's been filed pertaining to questions of obtaining body cam footage from a lot of stuff that's been already out there that occurred back in 2024 at the Coastal Resource Office. I mean, we get mm-hmm. into all that, an alleged domestic incident involving the mayor and his wife. The mayor denies it, vehemently denies it. So does his wife. But there is a federal lawsuit out there trying to access the body cam footage. And in the last month or so, the majority of the council's also filed a ethics complaint. And that's where we're at right now with the story.
And did they say ethics were? Was it about not having the release of the body cam, or was it something else?
There's a lot to it. I don't have actual access to the ethics complaint that the council filed. But from my understanding, what's already been reported, the access to the body cam footage kind of highlights that. But there's other matters as well, as far as not being informed with what's been going on with regards to this particular situation and the lawsuit that's been filed. I think the council members feel like they haven't been brought up to speed. And so that's kind of where we're at right now.
I mean, so obviously it's going to be, if it wasn't contentious before, now that you have an ethics, this filed, at the same time, you got to run government stuff, right? You got members of city council that filed the ethics complaint against the mayor, and they're all going to be there at a meeting about, Dolly Parton or whatever else.
Well, that Band-Aid was ripped off about 2 weeks ago. There was a meeting, and it's online, and the fireworks were blowing up, and it was all over appointing a replacement council member to longtime council member Jerry Johnson. He announced his he was resigning, he was retiring, whatever you want to call it. He was leaving the council, so that his position needed to be filled. But of course, he just got elected last year, so it's a 3.5 year appointment. That's a long appointment. So the council get in the weeds on it, but there was some. There was some support for placing Nelson Bauer on the council. He used to be a school board member. That was supported by Mayor Kennan and then the school board president, Randy McKinney. The council decided to go with Pat Simpson instead of Nelson Bauer. So members of the former school board, which includes Robert Stewart's on the city council, is butting heads with the current school board members. And then Mayor Kennan was upset over... he felt that, politics had been, overruled everything going on in Orange Beach with regards to this position. And I don't even know where to begin.
Simpson and Bauer? I mean, obviously they have preferences here and the mayor not liking what the council's doing. But is there a political thing at play with somebody at that level coming to the council?
Well, you had a couple. I think there had some school issues, and I think that was kind of overriding it. Now, Nelson Bauer had been on the school board. You talked to the folks with the school system. They said he was a fantastic school board member. But Councilman Robert Stewart, who just got elected, he used to be on the planning commission and on the school board. And, maybe perhaps there was some differences of opinion that occurred when they were on the school board together. And that created I think some of these issues with the ethics complaint being filed kind of rose. I mean, that wasn't discussed explicitly during this meeting, but you could tell that these bad vibes were going on right now. And that was, it's quite a council meeting. I haven't seen any meeting like this in a while. It kind of reminded me what happened in Fairhope about 6 or 7 years ago, where every meeting was almost like council versus mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of had that similar, it was a little very similar in style and substance, and makes you wonder going forward how these relationships can be repaired. So, yeah. If they can be repaired. And that's kind of where it was at. I kind of dive into some of it in the story on AL.com, and there's a lot of moving parts to it. But it was a meeting that was very explosive and kind of put a public light on the concerns down in Orange Beach.
Trouble in Paradise Island. We'll keep watching it. And then your story that caught my attention first thing this morning, though, was because I remember talking about this. Toys R Us. I remember asking back then, is it just the internet or is it the fact that, which I think there's a new Toy Story movie out. My son wants to watch it. It's about kids not playing with toys because they're on their tablets or whatever. But Toys R Us goes out, whatever, and now they're coming back. And they're coming back here.
Yeah, that's correct. They are back here. They're in Foley. They're at the Tanger Outlets. And there's no other location in Alabama, so we got it. It's a neat little place. I went down there and visited it last week with my daughter. And it's Toys R Us, but it's not the Toys R Us we remember. The big box stores that had unbelievable amounts of toys and video games and all that stuff. That's kind of a thing of the past right now. But
so what do they have? Like what, when you went in there, like what do they, I mean, are there physical toys to buy or is it just download?
So do you remember the old KB Hobby toy stores,
yes,
the ones that used to exist in the mall? That's basically what it's turned into now. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. There's a lot of product in there. I mean, there is, but it's kind of abbreviated. So, you used to go to Toys R Us and you'd go to, for instance, the G.I. Joe section, they'd have every updated character out that you could ever imagine, right? Well, you don't have that anymore. You have basically one little area of the G.I. Joe stuff, then you go over to another area that has the Tonka trucks and so on and so forth, the plush dolls. There are no video games in there. I noticed that. But there's a little bit of everything for everybody. And it's worth a trip with the kids.
Yeah, that's
you're going
cool.
to the Tanger Outlets. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to have that brand back, and I think a lot of people feel comforted by that.
I'm glad they re-signed Jeffrey too. You know, I mean,
yeah.
that he wasn't, he hadn't gone off to another company; that he was still available.
That's correct. He's the marketing push there.
Like, hey, Jeffrey, there's a phone call for you. Who is it? Is it those people at Toys R Us again? Put them on the phone, and they negotiated, you know, probably a good deal to sign them back in. Like, they bring players back on teams years later. I think it's like some kind of negotiation there for Jeffrey.
Yeah, something like that. I would put him probably more popular than Ronald McDonald at this point. So,
oh yeah, he's big time. Y'all write that on the text line. Jeffrey versus Ronald McDonald. I don't even think it's close. I don't think it's in close. All right. Y'all can read these stories at AL.com. When you search for John, or they want to find you directly on the socials, how do they do that?
At JohnSharp99.
Thanks, John. As always, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right, Sean.
All right. There he goes. John Sharp coming right back. Get to your text. And also, screw worms in the news, solar farms, a lot more.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 126, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Oh, by the way, so the beginning of Hot for Teacher right there. The light that's playing underneath us from the David Lee Roth-headed Van Halen, which, I mean, some okay stuff with Hagar, but I'm a David Lee Roth fan. So the boy and I were listening to that this weekend, riding down the road, listening to it, and I was just like, listen to the drums there. And he said, you know, that sure sounds like an engine on a muscle car rumbling. I've had that album since, that was 1984, right? The name of the album. I never picked up, I listened to that so many times, a cassette, and then on through MP3s. I mean, it's in my shuffle. You hit shuffle on the boat, you're going to hear that. I never caught on to that. There's my son's like, by the way, you could tell that's an engine rumbling. Maybe there's a whole bunch of y'all that figured that out way back, but I just thought it was this cool drum. Just like, listen to it. It's like, you know, when you crank up a muscle car. Brilliant. From the mouths of babes, right? Somebody commenting on the story from Devin. The casino boats are going to sink. I guess it's happening, you know, this week. Finally, those are the ones, like, if you've launched at the bayou before, that are sitting there, that had gotten loose before as well. Remember that? The casino boats had gotten loose and smashed stuff up in the past. So one of those going, hey, nice thing is, those should be easy to find. If you have trouble with your electronics, you have trouble barking stuff up, the sunk casino boats should be easy to bark up on the machine. But that'll be cool. That's going to be a cool wreck. All right. Also here on the text line, let's see. T-Bone said, if you're better off than I am, you're an entitled crook. If I'm better off than you, you're a lazy bum. We need to get that crocheted on a pillow, T-Bone. That's fantastic. Once again, if you're better off than I am, then you're an entitled crook. If I'm better off than you, you're a lazy bum. It's human nature, man. Let's see. Fire Dog said, every time I went in theater, I would go to Sam's Club and buy a big box of Texas Pete hot sauce packets. I would stuff as many of those in my bag as I could because they were worth their weight in gold. If you put enough of them in, any MRE was edible. Yeah, Texas Pete. There you go. Look at here. How about this? And Billy D says, look, the ones that I got had Denny Moore beef stew in them. Just add water to that hot pack. And then, of course, always had a little bit of that thing, Tabasco sauce, that made anything bearable. So two vets right there back to back. It's all about the hot sauce. So Tabasco versus Texas Pete. I like both of them. They're both in my house. So it's Crystal hot sauce. Unnamed texture said, come back. This is somebody, the earlier texture about the SNAP benefits. Said, I care about my family too much to feed them MREs on purpose. They should clean out the system starting downtown at the Department of Human Resources. I hope we can clean out all government offices in the state and all others. When are they going to raid Mobile Government Plaza like they did Pritchard? Ha ha, and watch the crooked son of a biscuits scatter. And then Backstrap Stacker, you know what Orange Beach needs? An MMA arena, the Tony Kennan MMA Plaza. put that right there instead of the Dolly Parton dinner theater. Might be onto something. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Leave us a talk back message. You can always use the FM Talk 106.5 app. When you're there, front page of the app, there's a microphone icon. If you press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can choose to play it back here on the air. So check that out as well. The segment of the show brought to you by my buddies at Stone Arms, Jeff and the whole crew at Stone Arms. And what a better time? What a better time than here heading into Independence Day to think about your Second Amendment rights. We talk about the process for getting a silencer, suppressor, a can. They're great at that. They've expedited this, made it so very easy to do that. At the same time, I talk about that a bunch, but there's just a great selection of firearms. I mean, it really, new firearms coming in every day. Used firearms, you'll find, like, when you look in the used rack, if you go, like, if you give it a week or two, you'll go in, you'll be like, oh, I didn't see that. And new stuff coming in all the time. Plus, like, accessories. Things you want for your rifles, for your handguns, for your shotguns, they've got them. They've got the, whether you're adding to or fixing stuff or anything in between, but cases, straps, all that stuff is right there at Stone Arms. They're about a quarter mile west of Snow on Airport Boulevard, there on the south side. StoneArmsInc.com online, or just find Stone Arms Inc. on Facebook and go check them out today. All right, so we're trying to get back to text, but I want to do this, a couple things here. Number one, I asked this question at the end of Jeff's show, and I wonder, I mean, are there some differences? Sure. But is there some analog here? I thought about this weekend as I was, on a power line doing work, and not on power lines, but on the ground tilling dirt underneath it. You think about the power lines and the gas lines that come through the country, right, to feed power to the cities. And also to the rural areas, but the net, the bulk of it's going to cities. Anywhere in the country, both meaning our country and the country feeds the cities, right? The flyover states, they call, even though like California is one exception, they grow a lot of stuff there too, and they're not a flyover state. But the flyover states that grow the food to feed to the cities. The energy production from oil and gas, exploration, production, refining, electricity, be that coal-powered, natural gas-powered, nuclear, wind farms, whether you like it or not, they're not in downtown anywhere. Solar farms that are out there. So I don't, with the solar farm and the discussions here and so much of this being pushed for data centers, I wonder how much it's a problem with solar farms versus data centers. I've heard some nightmares about data centers and they don't want to employ a bunch of people. There's noise issues on a lot of them, right? The constant drone of them. Like, I guess it's the sound. I saw this person in North Alabama. My friend was showing me, she was showing me this person who posts up every few days up there, lives somewhere in North Alabama, Tuscumbia or somewhere up there, and the kind of the noise pollution from that, and I think that's a real thing. That's a data center issue, but powering these data center issues, or these data centers, things like solar farms, right? Because these companies want to pat themselves on the back and say they are no net users of carbon, right, carbon-based energy. Even here in Alabama, the idea of the solar farm would not be to run a big old extension cord up to Montgomery to power their data center. It would be to trade back to Alabama Power, which wouldn't that be nice if we, the citizens, could do that here? We don't. We don't have that ability. But to trade back to Alabama Power, power produced from the solar grid to offset the carbon-produced energy that they're burning in Montgomery. But is there some analog? Like, I wonder if we were talking about making natural gas lines and power lines now? You know, they've been there for so long, this discussion didn't happen. But would there be pushback there? Like, we shouldn't, you know, clear those woods and put a power line through it. Think about the Delta. And we're not talking about the Delta. We're talking about something pretty special. And we cleared lines through there. So I don't. It's interesting. I understand if you live there, you don't want something new and unknown. I get that. But I do wonder if there's an analog here. Story from Andrea Ramey over at WPMI says, Silicon Ranch says it's received conditional approval to move forward with its proposed 4,500-acre solar project in Baldwin County just days before Stockton area voters decide on whether to adopt zoning. Opponents of the $350 million project pushed for Tuesday's vote, hoping zoning could stop the solar farm. According to the Silicon Ranch CEO, Reagan Farr says, regardless of the outcome of Tuesday's referendum, construction's expected to begin this fall. I think it's because it's grandfathered in. It was before the law, right? You can't have the law be retroactive. So Baldwin County Commission says the company has received conditional approval for its land disturbance permit, pending permits from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and ADEM. So there's disagreement here, though. Like, the people that are fighting this solar project say, in fact, maybe it doesn't work that way. Megan Fowler, who's been on this station, is quoted here and saying, here it is, saying, despite the county's position that the project is grandfathered, Fowler says her group will still fight the project. Quote, we are considering legal action. We really don't want to. We love our country, and we really want our county to support us. We don't want to have to go to legal action with the county or with Silicon Ranch if we don't have to. So that referendum's up. But, yeah, will it be retroactive? And where they, you know, once again, where they're going to set these solar farms to feed data centers, I mean, while all the attention has been on the Stockton solar farm, we've talked about on the show months ago when this all came up, but we had figured there are as many as three or maybe four that are out there right now in our area. Over the state, I think there are nine with another 15 that have been permitted out there. And how different is this? I mean, you have to like it. And, you know, the beauty of government locally is trying to fight it locally. But is this much different? And is it because it feeds a data? Is the solar farm of question because it feeds a data center? Or is if that solar farm was there and it was feeding the grid, do you think there'd be a difference in opinion? Would it be more like a power line easement? Is some of y'all driving past one right now? Or gas line easement? You know, they talk about the risk of things. Well, the risk is left in the country, right? That's how cities are fed energy and food, with the risks and the land choices that are made in the country. And like I said, both our country and the country. So we'll see what happens with the referendum, but I think there's probably other municipalities watching this around the state. What could be done here? And I think we'll be talking about it going forward. But yeah, they're having this referendum. So we'll watch what happens, because I mean, according to quote here from Megan Fowler, was they're not wanting to do legal action, but they're not taking it off the table. Megan Fowler says, yes, right now, after hearing what our legal counsel has to say on this, it doesn't seem like this is a completed permit. There's going to be now more confusion over this and what it could and could not do. So we can hear from you on that as well. All right. And then the screwworm thing. I think it's of interest here. The story, you've probably seen it, read it or seen it on television or heard us talk about it. The New World screwworm, which is not actually a worm. It's the maggot, the larva of a fly, which is crazy because, you know, flies lay eggs on dead stuff, right? Except the New World screwworm does it on living animals. And that, anywhere that they can gain access to that critter, be it a wound on the critter, if they can't find a wound on the critter or some kind of opening there, they go after any Can you say this on the air? Any orifice? You can say that word. I think I got in trouble in school for saying the word orifice. And now here I am making a living doing it. They can lay the egg in there. And then the egg, the maggots start eating the host while the host is alive. It's after lunch. Come on now. It can get into, like for cattle, it can get into any kind of open cuts. If they have a tick bite, maybe the tick is off there. Any kind of open thing they can get in. Also a big thing for livestock is like, and wildlife out there too. Think about all the wild critters. The umbilical cord of a newborn animal. I mean, this is the list of animals that could be infected here. Cattle, horses, sheep, goats, deer, dogs, and cats. Really, I think all wildlife. I mean, this, they don't seem to show that they don't attack all wildlife. So this is it's a big deal, but this is not new. That's what I think is interesting. So this was something that in the 30s, I think the first reports I was reading about, 30s issues in Texas with livestock being attacked by these big outbreaks of New World screwworm flies. So they started a program back then to fight them by irradiating males. It would make them infertile. These screw, and then they would release them, and the lady flies would be hooking up with the boy flies, and nothing was happening, right? They didn't have any eggs to lay. So they started this fight and pushed it back out of Texas and southeastern New Mexico, pushed it back into Mexico. Then I think like 1971, 72, they had another outbreak. And they, I guess they had several in between, but they realized that they couldn't just get rid of the screwworms in Texas because there's a repository of them in Mexico and they come right back. So they started, we the people, United States, USDA, started a program of releasing these sterile flies through Mexico and down through Central America. I thought it was interesting, too. Where we stopped them was, it's something we talk about with immigration stories, the Darien Gap, right? A small isthmus of land, Panama to Colombia there. And because of research, they kept pushing them down with these sterile flies, and they're doing this through Mexico, and they're moving the population back and moving the population back. They figured out that these flies wouldn't fly over water. And so they got to this isthmus here because there's a huge repository in South America that is going to keep coming. Well, because of that narrow section of land there and the fact that the flies wouldn't fly over water, USDA, so we the people, have a facility that was set up there to put huge amounts of these sterilized male screwworm flies out. So they could never gain purchase. You know, they hook up at the flying nightclub, but nothing would happen. Okay. So they continued to do this and do this and do this. And at that point, for decades, these New World screwworm flies were not an issue. They were not getting any farther north than Colombia. Because once they got to that narrow piece of land and the fact that the screwworms wouldn't fly out of her water, they were encountering hundreds of millions of sterilized screwworm flies. Then COVID hits. And this is what's interesting. This is the COVID angle. The facility there near the Darien Gap, they couldn't, so they have to fly, they breed these things in the facility, then they fly them out on planes and let them go out there. They couldn't, number one, get fuel for the airplanes, and number two, get parts. The mechanics down there weren't getting the parts because of supply chain issues. During COVID, you remember those days, right? You hadn't forgot that. So they ended up not being able to fly these flies into the skies like they had been before, and they couldn't do their job. And this is what's amazing, because you're talking about unsung heroes, and I don't think anybody, many people out there were studying what was going on with USDA in the Darien Gap area. But we had for decades, they, but our people, had kept this population to the south of Panama. It took just a year of not being able to do this project with these irradiated male flies to lose control. They got out. They got beyond it. Then things came back online post-COVID. They started working up. But at that point, you're picturing, picture, you're right, Central America, right? As you come up from the isthmus there, right? The land widens and widens and widens and widens as you get up into Mexico. By the time Mexico gets to the United States, it's huge. Right? You've got a, it's like looking at a tornado, small at the bottom, big at the top. And once they got out and got up there, control efforts were really tough because now you didn't have a corridor. You had a huge corridor versus that narrow one they had before. And just in that period of time, from COVID to now, what had been abated since 73 or so made its way up through Mexico and lost control of it. So I think what we're going to be looking at here is another project with the seriousness of what they did in the 30s, but then in earnest in the 70s to push this further back. It's just kind of interesting what's happening, you know, way south of us, protecting us up here in the United States, and just something like COVID. And here it comes back. We'll be back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Got a couple of these texts here. And Jerry in Fort Morgan. Has Natural Resources Alabama announced anything on this matter? Medication feed has been very effective in helping wildlife. So I hadn't heard anything. Doesn't mean they hadn't put it out. I didn't see anything yet from the state, Jerry. But there is a discussion of getting a temporary okay from the feds to start using this medicine they would put in cattle feed. And then actually on the wildlife side, they said they could put it in some wildlife feeds out there. But their worry was, I think, was people not using the right dosage. The idea, like people who use antibiotics too much or don't use them correctly and you get a resistance. So they're scared that, and that's why they're debating it right now. And that seems fair, that if people apply this stuff incorrectly and you don't kill the screwworm larva, called maggots, you don't kill them, then they survive it and they pass on an ability to survive this medication. It's like, and it's, so, and also they're raising in, like, imagine that's your job, these facilities where they're raising these screwworm flies and then irradiating all of them, which makes the male sterile. It doesn't do anything to the females, but that's all they need. Well, they're now something about a fly they're developing. It sounds like the beginning of a Jurassic Park sequel, but they've monkeyed with the fly, so they produce all males. So instead of, if you created, like, they're probably a 50-50 sex ratio. So you create 100 million to get 50 million males. Now they can make it all males. And Mexico, I mean, everybody's got to be in on this to, like, you have to push it back. And the genius of what happened back in the 70s is push it back to the Darien Gap, where you had this narrow area to stop them. But President of Mexico, Sheinbaum, working with U.S. Agriculture Secretary, this is from Reuters. Said, yeah, Sheinbaum and Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins attended the opening of a facility in Matampa de Dominguez near the Guatemalan border. The plant, a U.S.-Mexico project costing over $50 million, will eventually produce 100 million sterile flies weekly to suppress the wild screwworm population. And I guess if they start working that, they can start working south again out there. And then we've got to get the facility down at the Darien Gap back up and running. But, yeah, this is something. I mean, it was kind of a COVID disruption. You think about follow-on consequences of things. They couldn't get supply. They couldn't get the things they needed in there to fix the airplanes and fuel the airplanes. And this thing gets loose. And we all had been living a life not even thinking about these things, not realizing there was a project that got them stopped down there. All right. A couple other texts here. Joe T., why wouldn't the solar farm be closer to Montgomery since that's who it's going to be feeding? But it's not. That's the thing. That's a big misunderstanding. What they're doing is Alabama Power is providing the data center up there in Montgomery is burning good old carbon-based energy. But for these companies to feel good about themselves, like Meta, they're saying they're a non-net contributor to burning carbon, right? So they pay for a facility to produce solar, to sell that solar to Alabama Power that will be in your homes down here, that is an offset to the amount that they're burning for the facility in Montgomery. Let's see, unnamed texter. Sean, I may have missed the conversation, but I still don't know what the objection to the solar farm is based on. Can you help me understand? Yeah, we'll have to do that on a further show. We've done it in the past. I mean, there's questions about the wetlands, but everything I've looked at, they're not stepping on the wetlands. They're preserving them the same way you would with the SMZ. I mean, that land is loblolly pines, you know, that you grow and you cut. Aiden, I don't know. Aiden from Citronelle says, could you put solar farms under power lines? I think they like them to be close to power lines because it makes it easier to get the energy in there. And Michael says, the anti-solar Karens up there would just be against it if it was rainbows and a sunshine factory. They're just going to find the next cause du jour. All right, Paul Feinbaum will calm it down next.